Blog Talk Radio.
Friday night, and that's the Mayor Beacon Maintenance time for the political consciousness of West Coast Steeler fan. Hosted by West Coast Steeler fan. That's me, James King. In light of the question that our guest brought up last week, what is political consciousness? What is political awareness? How are they connected? What does it mean within communities? Tonight we're going to focus on the Black community. I would love to have someone from the LGBTQ community join us, or at least contact me to be part of this conversation, because I actually have some serious questions about the what it means to different groups. And sadly, that's what it's come to. We have divided ourselves into different groups. And as a lot of veteran soldiers will tell you, when you start drawing lines and segregating yourselves into groups, it sometimes causes for a tremendous amount of friction. I'm going to grab Mr. Ernie Haynes here, and we're going to start the conversation. And then I'm going to be joined by Brother Umar McDonald, who has also been on the show a few times. I wanted to get him and Brother Shabazz Barksdale together on this. And Brother Shabazz is the one that actually brought this topic up to me and made me want to pursue it. And hopefully we can get him next Friday. Right now, let's grab Ernie and see what he has to see what his thoughts are, because Ernie practices tough love. And as you heard, as Ernie says, when guys come to his gym, they come in with two strikes. And in his case, and with the guys that he worked with, this seems to work. So I'm going to ask him how his philosophy kind of rolls over into this particular field. Good evening, sir. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on? I got an issue going on here. Junior's missing.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you want to call us back later on, or?
Yeah, I'll give you a call back a little bit later.
All right. Okay. I'll talk to you, man.
Okay. All righty. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we sometimes, since we're live, sometimes we can't really control the things that happen with some of our guests. But getting back to the issue of the question that was raised, is there a difference between political consciousness and political awareness? Here's where I draw the line. When you say consciousness, to me that means a state of mind. It means a condition that can't be seen, but it can be felt. Okay? When you talk about awareness, you're aware of your surroundings. You have an actual sensory perception. Okay? So, can you be politically conscious without being politically aware? And I think the answer to that is yes. Because we have seen numerous attempts at trying to turn political awareness into political consciousness and vice versa. And I'll give you an example. The Black Panther Party. Okay? The Black Panther Party said, we have the right to be armed. We have the right to feed our neighborhood, we have the right to protect our neighborhood. And the powers that be immediately took this to fear. Because you can't educate on a hungry belly. Because that hungry belly has different priorities. Now, you can be hungry and politically aware that your life is on the bottom of the totem pole, of course. So, you can be politically aware due to your circumstances. You can also be politically conscious because it goes into your psyche. Slaves were, and I'm a Black man, so you know I'm not trying to go somewhere where that is not part of my history. Anyway, I think everyone knows that slaves were politically conscious let me backtrack. I think that slaves were politically aware because they knew that there was no place for them to go. This was the majority concept. We're slaves, this is massive, this is where we belong. The fact that others fled to the north they were politically conscious. They knew that there was something better and they sought to achieve it. Now, this kind of brings us to the modern day. Because I want to kind of break this down and I'm not sure. Okay. All right. Let's start with, I was born in 1947. So let's start with my grandparents. And what was our moral compass? Are you there? Hello.
Hey, how you doing? Hey.
Oh, okay. Crisis averted, huh?
Yeah. How's everybody doing?
Oh, everybody's fine, man. I was actually going through a little soliloquy about my own here, so I'm glad to have you here, so I'm not talking, to myself,
yeah.
So to speak.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be joined a little bit by Brother Umar again, because I had a guest on last week, Brother Shabazz Barksdale, and he raised a question that I thought was very important, especially in today's society. And his question was, is there a difference between political consciousness and political awareness? And if there is, how do we get the message to our youth? Ernie, you have young sons, and I have a few of my own, so I share your pain. Fortunately, mine are much older. So, that brings other problems, but, granddad and all that, the smiles and the hugs, that puts all that behind, you know what I mean? But anyway, talking about the present, do you feel, especially when you deal with young men, do you feel that there's a difference between political consciousness and political awareness? And if there is, how do we get that message to the young men today?
Well, the youth today, such as, my son's generation, he's 16, just turned 16, going on 26. But this new generation is, they are aware of the politics, but I don't think they are conscious of the full capabilities of it. Now, you remember back in some months ago when we was all arguing about the border, right? And the border strikes and all of that stuff. And remember on this show, we got to talking about how the borders was going to be flooded with what? With the narcotics. You have to be conscious to boost this economy. You have to be conscious. And what just happened the other day on the news? They seized the entire cargo ship full of it, full of billions of dollars of drugs, headed this way. Now, that's what you have to be conscious of. You be aware of the problems of what they're saying, but you have to go a little bit deeper and find out why. There's a why for everything. There's a cause and effect for everything. So there's a difference, but it's a very slim difference. And, and some people will say that one from the other is basically, you just being a conspiracy theorist or something like that. But yeah, you have to think deep into it. This new generation right now, they tend to just take things on face value and just run with it. They really, don't actually sit down and think about the long-term and short-term effects the ins and outs of politics after, you know, a ruling has been made or a law has been passed or something is on deck to be passed. They really don't look too much deeper than that. I mean, it's not their fault because we have all this internet and these cell phones and stuff. So, you know, they just take it at on face value and just run with it like that. But there's a few out here that can read between the lines now, and they know how to peep up under the table to see what's going on.
See, now, Ernie, I do have an argument for that because because after, you know, all of this stuff about the southern border and how, you know, California is contributing and all this, right? Okay. That ship was seized in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Cargo, the people that were in charge or that got charged, you know, it happened to be, I think one was from Brazil and one was from somewhere else. But these aren't immigrant families running across the border with 750 tons of cocaine.
Exactly.
So, you know, the border, like you said, you know, you can, you know, our biggest border is the water line.
Thank you. You have to be politically conscious to see the bullshit, the bull crap rather.
No, you can say that on this program.
Okay. Well, you and I, we called this months ago when he shut the government down about this border. That was a ploy. What's going to boost the economy is letting drugs up in here. That was a ploy to shut the government down, to weaken its borders so that shit can float up in here. And sure enough, they caught the smaller ship that had, what, a measly billion dollars worth of drugs on it. They caught that one. And everybody celebrating, oh, we got a lot, y'all. No, you didn't. You didn't catch them other 12 that this cruise passed. With $10 billion worth of crap on them.
Yeah, and like I said, that was Philadelphia. What about New York, Boston? You know,
thank you.
All up and down the East Coast. You know,
mm-hmm.
while y'all over here trying to talk about, you know, California and you know, a wall across the border. But the economy will boom. Yes.
The economy will boom now.
See now. Once again, you make me go back in the day, because because here's the thing. Okay, you talk about drugs and people, you know, before. Well, I guess during Vietnam and all that era, we had heroin. And people were talking about how, you know, heroin, you know, was a destruction within the black community.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now in the 80s, we see crack cocaine brought into the country.
Yeah.
And as far as to my knowledge, now maybe I'm wrong, maybe, you know, like I said, maybe I have to go check my facts. But there are no black shipping companies, there are no black airlines, private airlines that were bringing those things into the country. I don't think there's ever been, I mean, you know, we've been convicted of selling it, convicted of profiting from it, but as far as the actual manufacturing and bringing it in, I mean, you know, no. We've always depended upon some other race to help us exploit ourselves. Now, getting back to the respect,
mm-hmm.
when you look at what crack cocaine did to the community, and it didn't start with the youth like marijuana or maybe some other recreational drugs. It started with people that were our age, okay?
Right,
it
right.
It started with, kids saw their mothers turning tricks for rock.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Kids became head of their households because their father was in jail, or maybe the mother was locked up, but at least one person in that household was incarcerated.
Right. Right.
Now my question to you is that when we as elders lost control of our youth and lost not only control but the respect of our youth, is this what we're fighting for now in 2000?
This is why, that is the reason why our communities are basically non-supportive and basically morally destroyed. Now, this new movement now, get your trick to this, because everybody is probably thinking that, hey, all this stuff is going to end up in the black communities. No, that's too cliche. You know where this product is going? This product is going to the Brown family now. They about to flood these brown communities now. They already done with the black community. A little bit of it is going to float in our community, but they going to predominantly concentrate on the brown communities now, because they are family orientated. They got to bust that up. A lot of them is going to college and graduating. They got to bust that up. You look up on stage, you got a lot of them running for office and stuff like that. They got to bust that up. And then lay the blame on them for the border over there. Another deception. All that product, majority of that product is coming to these brown communities. The new up and coming family in America. Because our community is basically done. I mean, we can't stand one another. If one of us get a new truck or something like that, another will make it our business to come key it up or steal it or something like that. You know, and then we have to keep our successes quiet because, we'd be considered braggers and stuff like that if we'd be too successful. Perfect example, Nipsey Hussle. Too successful, and everyone's faced with the success, trying to help. What they do, what the guy do, came and smoked the man in broad daylight in front of his child. So there is a new fight brewing in America, and it all started with this border argument, with the shutdown of the government. And we act like we don't even know what's going on. We acting like we don't even see what's going on. That's because we're not politically conscious. We're aware of it because the news makes us aware of it. Oh, we just seized a ship with $2 billion worth of narcotics on it. Okay. Where's the rest of it at? Where's the other ships at? They didn't already touch down. They didn't already touch down in nearby brown cities.
Oh, you can't get too much closer to brown cities than what, Philadelphia, Camden, Newark. I can go all up and down that triangle. I live there, hustle there, so I know the area well. And so,
yeah.
But see, and this is another thing, coming back to the word respect. because we respected a lot of bad characters in our neighborhoods, such as the pimp, the pimps and you know, the hustlers and so forth and so on. We considered them successful because they either moved out of the ghetto, or they had the trappings, they had the car, they had the suit, they had the women, they had the money, and there was no social media.
Right.
But a lot of guys in the project, sadly I wasn't one of them, you know, decided to use these guys as examples to make their way out. Not heroes, but you know, this is what I don't want to be like.
Right.
And this was successful during our period 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When these youth look at the amount of time that is given for a rock or for whatever their particular gang produces or their territory, whatever, when they see men going to jail, I mean, I'll give you an example. I was 28 years old. I come back. I caught a case. I won't give a whole lot of details about it, but I stood in front of a judge after giving a lawyer close to $100,000, and I had a judge bend the gavel and tell me 25 to life. Okay?
Yeah.
Although I didn't, you know, I wanted to put up that brave front and all that, you know, inside, you know, I'm like, what the, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and I'm looking around. People think I'm looking for my family, but I'm actually looking for who the hell is he talking to? You know, so,
that's right.
You know,
right.
So. But I'm looking at kids now, 18 years old, 19 years old, 21 to 22, going to jail for the rest of their lives, or shooting at each other and killing a little 12-year-old girl down the block or something like that. Now, you know, I'm not condoning the actions, as I said, but back in the day, you know, the guy that was intended to be shot was shot. He was executed. They found him somewhere with the fishes or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you didn't execute a whole family. You didn't just needlessly go down the street shooting at somebody because they had on a black hat or a red hat or a blue hat. So I guess I'm asking you, why is it that we have more respect for the outlaws than we do have for the Obamas or the Obamas' daughters of our generation, or like you mentioned, Nipsey Hussle? Do you think is this a mindset from the past, or I mean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, there's a thing that's called the Willie Lynch theory. It's still alive and it's still working today. It's more strong now than pretty much ever before since slavery. And it's just self-hate. It's self-hate. We'd rather look to a destructive person than to look toward a more positive person. I mean, that's just the way. Is it just the way that it's been programmed, you know? And it's television is telling the vision of that particular way of thinking as well. You know, none of us can get along on TV either. And the ratings is making a killing. The television host and producers of the show is making a killing off the, you know, off the arguing and the fighting on television. It's just our self-hate has grown to some of the highest levels ever, to where now the Klansmen don't have to do anything but just sit back and watch they work. We really get mad at them when they don't allow us to kill one another now. When they step in and interfere with their own work, we get upset. But when we whack out a 5-year-old girl, like just happened here, maybe about a week ago, 5-year-old girl caught a butt. No outrage. Nobody saying nothing. You know, right now, my son has been missing for 24 hours. We get a call at 5 o'clock this morning from the Milwaukee Police and Fire Rescue. We missed the call because we were asleep. So we try to return the call just the recording comes on. So now I'm looking for my son. I don't know if he's in the hospital. I don't even know if my teenage son is dead. I don't even know right now. I don't know. I still hadn't seen him. So, but this is what we have to face, you know, every day. And the average parent right now would be going crazy.
Thank you for calling, and please leave a message. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the average parent right now will be going crazy. You know, they got a missing child and stuff. You know, but this is something that we've grown to be accustomed to. You know, where parents is, kids is not burying their parents anymore. The parents is burying the children. The parents is burying the children.
But see, once again, this goes back to me,
mm-hmm.
to respect, and you know, like I said, you know, I live a third of my life as a criminal, so
yeah.
You know, I mean, I understand the mentality of what you're talking about, but
yeah.
If my grandmother had been alive. And, you know, God rest her soul. But my life would have been much different. Because if
yeah.
I had come in the house with that with that type of attitude or talking about, you know, grandma, I miss, you know, 7 day period today because I wanted to go get with this girl over at another school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, I'm not going to put on no belt today because I want my pants to sag down and, by the way, Grandma, you know, I know you work hard, but I need a pair of tennis shoes that cost $300.
Right.
Can you help me?
Yeah.
You know, I would not dare. I would not dare. I wouldn't even think of it. Right now, I can still feel the welts, and I had to go get the switches myself. They might have called it capital punishment, but for grandma to go and get them switches, it wasn't like mom and dad. You know, it was a whole different type of respect. You know what I'm
right.
saying? You wanted your grandparents to be proud of you. Therefore, your parents was proud of you. But it was a
yeah.
generational. You wanted the elders to give you that gratification that your life was successful. Nowadays,
right.
when your son, or, you know, I'm not saying yours for saving, I'm just saying the youth of our day, when your son is bringing home more money than you are
right.
on a
not just a weekly basis, but a nightly basis. And you know, all of a sudden now he's driving a new car, and you know you didn't give him no allowance. So where's his money coming from? You see you see the people that he's hanging out with, you know, and all of a sudden, maybe if you know the signs, you know, you might see that bulge somewhere that it shouldn't be, like the ball of his back and down around his ankle. Why do we accept this type of behavior from our children? Like I said,
well, you know, the grid is so marked.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead.
The grid is so locked right now, whereas we as parents, okay, they have these child abuse laws locked into place so tough, and people are so quick to pick up the phone on us when they see us going upside one of our children's head that we don't even bother to even try it anymore, because we can't afford to get arrested, put on the news, get battery or anything put on our records because of Facebook and social media and this internet thing. And, you know, we miss a few days on the job. We like not to have a job. And everyone is living not even paycheck to paycheck now. You know, we barely making it now. So we can't afford to miss a beat. So something has to lack. You know, everything is taking a chance now. It used to be that way, where I had to take a chance on if I wanted to discipline my child, as opposed to going to jail, missing work, missing out on the mortgage or the rent, you know, and getting some type of violent charge put on me for battery or child abuse, where then I would lose my job or my license to do my job. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that comes in. And then they made sure that the child knows this. They made sure that the child know this, that they got rights. That if someone touches you, your parents touches you, they can get in trouble. So that's what's going on also. So they walk through your house, they bring in, and this is no lie. You know, they bring in, this is the honest God truth. My son one time brought in D's and F's. He laid that report card on the table like it was a Pulitzer Prize or something and went straight in my fucking refrigerator and fixed him a meal. You know, that was unheard of when we was little. We brought in a bad report card. We went straight upstairs to our room and got quiet. We didn't want no water. Nothing to eat. You didn't even know we was upstairs breathing. Went straight in my refrigerator and made him a meal and sat down and ate because he knew I wasn't going to come and bash his head in. He knew I couldn't come bash his head in because if I did, he'd tell it and I lose my license. If I lose my license, I lose my livelihood. I lose my source of income. I can't coach if I got violence on my record. I can't work with the youth. So it's just situations like that that parents is put in.
He can't go in the refrigerator either, though. You lose your license, you can't go in the refrigerator.
Exactly.
He can't go on that PlayStation or whatever he likes to do. You know,
And then if we don't put anything in the refrigerator, here they come again. Talking about child neglect. So it's a catch-22. The sword has a double sharp edge on it. You know, so we have to pick the end that's not as sharp as the other end, basically, when it comes to these children. So, you know, it's a tough situation. And it's basically focused in primarily in our communities. You slap your child in the mouth by acting a fool in the grocery store. Guess what? Before you get out that grocery store, about 10 people will be reported you and have you on film. Next thing you know, the police is whisking your children away and got you on the news and up for charges. Now you got to go through all this parent counseling and all of this other stuff to get your children back. And not only that, they billing you for all of this. Yeah. So it's almost like, why even bother? If my child want to be a knucklehead, then I might as well. It's coming to that point where parents are starting to say this. If my children want to be knuckleheads, then I might as well get the insurance on them. Just keep talking to them. Hopefully they listen. But if they don't, at least I don't have to beg anybody to bury them. That's the point it's getting to with a lot of these parents out here. Because those are the rules and the laws that's been voted into play. And unfortunately, those cards are the ones that minorities have to play. And we got to play them close to the chest. Because all eyes is on us, especially in public.
But see, you know, once again, I go back to the basics, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I realize that, you know, hey, it's not the 50s, okay, so, you know, teachers aren't going to paddle you anymore, you know, they're not going, you know, I mean, usually before, well, I've never been put in that situation, but when I do remember when your child was failing, getting to that point about midway through the semester, the teacher would send you a note. The teacher would call you in. The teacher would,
yeah.
You would, you know, and in my house, if the teacher called you in, if my parents had to come to school,
mm-hmm.
Well, we know how that story how that story is. Yeah.
I had a teacher that would be sitting at the dinner table when I came in. Comfortable. With her shoes off. Making sure I was gonna get lit up when she left.
See? See? You know. I mean, we talk about the village, we talk about, you know, unity and all that, but, I mean, it seems like we have gotten away from basic family values. Now, and to me, once again, this separates us into groups, okay?
Yeah.
We are now black parents, black teachers, black scientists, black doctors. What happened to doctors? When I was under fire, I didn't give a goddamn. Who came over, what color he was, what religion he was. If I got hit, I would just decide to come take care of me, okay?
Yeah, right.
And when I went back in the 70s, things had changed. You had groups within groups. You had, you know, the white boys. Then you had the white supremacists. You had the drunks. You had the guys that smoked weed. You know, and then even them were divided into subgroups. You know, you had the black ones, the white ones. You know what I'm saying? But in the beginning, we were all brothers fighting for a common cause. Almost every organization that we see that backs these, and I'm not saying all of them or condoning all of them, but just using an example, the Black Muslims, the Black Panthers, at one time, the SNCC. I mean, what happened to the foundations that were laid within the black community for us to use these as tools, and now we've abandoned them?
Yeah, we abandoned them because we were given other opportunities and other freedoms. We were given other freedoms. When you don't have that many freedoms, you definitely you tend to concentrate on the few that you have. When we had got other freedoms to go and shop at Luciano's fine apparels and stuff, which Luciano don't like us at all, but he gotta let us in the store to buy his stuff. When we got those freedoms, we abused it. You know, just to throw it up in his face. I'm going to make you rich, whether you like it or not. You know? So, I mean, when we were limited back in the day with certain freedoms, you know, with all jokes aside, the few freedoms that we did have, we cherished them. And we executed them. You know, as soon as we was able to branch out and mingle with others and other experience and things like that, that weakened our foundation. And that's one of the things that happened in our community. You know, that's just one of the things. So, it's not anybody's fault. It's just, you know, the mentality that we were in. It's not anybody's fault. The only thing we have to do is just come to and just realize what's going on, what we are doing. That's all. It can be fixed overnight. It can be fixed overnight.
Well, you know, how do you think it can be fixed overnight when it has become generational? I mean, you know, and now they have, as you said, you know, you have the laws to back it up. So I don't know if the control can be taken overnight, because...
Well, there's writing... As we take it back a little bit further. There's writings on the wall. There is writings on the wall that, you know, people don't believe. You know, they laugh about. But all it's going to take is for those writings to reveal themselves. Reveal themselves, or maybe by now. Just to confirm who they are. And when they disappear, when they leave, we'll click right into order there. And the rest of the world will click into order. And definitely repent. And definitely freaking repent.
Here's my main concern. Your son, 16 years old. I have grandkids within some that age group, some a lot younger. I'm more concerned about the younger ones, like the littlest. I believe she's 5 now.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what values are going to be passed on. In other words, I'm going back into my past. I see where daughters are still maintaining their wares on the same corner that their mother was on. Okay? And by that I'm saying, you know, is this the value that you want your, you know, do you want your granddaughter to be a stripper? Do you want your granddaughter to be hustling on the streets? Do you want your granddaughter to be a doctor or maybe somewhat of that ilk? But
yeah,
she sees the example that you set by having a good education and a Facebook reputation.
Yeah, it's
what are your concerns about not this generation, but the next one coming along?
Now, the 5-year-olds, I got a son that's eight years old. That generation and under, is going to be very skillful in technology. They're not going to act off emotions either, such as how we act off emotions in a lot of cases. They're not, because they've been raised by technology. Everything is going to be cool and calculated with this new generation coming up, and they ain't going to give a damn. They're not going to give a damn. It's going to all be about stats with them. That's how technology right now is raising them right now. It's about stats. Everything is going to be about a vote. Stats. How many approve, how many disapprove. Analytics, that's what this new generation is going to be all about. This new generation is not going to care. They're going to make moves that's going to appear to be logical to them. That's it. That is it. Not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I don't know, but I tell you what. I don't want to end up in a nursing home with one of them.
See that? You know, and that brings about another, you know, you bring up, I mean, we are getting older, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I would have never thought to have survived this long. I think my grandmother died before she was 50 years old. Most of, you know, the men in my family, died early.
Right.
I think my father was probably one of the oldest. He lived to be 81. But these were days that I will admit I was not really prepared for.
Right.
You know, I live young, be a pretty corpse, all that. Yeah, I went through that, you know. But, I still knew that I could depend on family.
Yeah.
Even when I was incarcerated, I knew, you know, on holidays, birthdays, I was going to get that box, you know. I was going to brag to the buddies about, you know, hey, man, look what the family sent me, this and that and the other, you know. But there's two factors here. Number one, with so long a sentence that they're passing out nowadays, do you really expect the family to take care of you and themselves for 40 or 50 years while you're behind bars? That's one. And number two, have, when you speak of the younger generation dealing with their analytics and not emotions so much, are we losing the sense of family? Has family just become a word and not the actual content that it used to be? I mean, you know, when grandma said be home at 6 o'clock for dinner, that she didn't mean 6:30. She didn't mean, and she definitely didn't mean 2 days later. You know, so I mean, you say you don't know whether it's good or bad, but black people depended on family. It was the one thing we had to keep us together. You know, it was a basic unit. By losing the family, have we lost our identity?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the same with America. America's lost its identity. It's lost. It's taking on a whole new identity right now. And it's that of a criminal with a big ass gun.
But
that's what it is.
But they don't last. The three strikes law made sure of that, you know. Otherwise, I might not be talking to you.
I'm talking about the government. I'm talking about the government now. Yeah, how everything is set up. Just us as being Americans in general. You know how the rest of the world look at us. They look at us as just, you know,
buffoons,
greedy.
Buffoons, dummies, idiots. That's how they look at us. We have no respect on the world stage.
Yeah, as you know, I got the Roku on one of the TVs in the room, and I watch a lot of movies that they make in other countries and stuff. And you know, you can learn a lot about how they portray Americans in their movies. And in all of their movies, we portray it as the same: loud, quick to shoot, and greed, and stupid, with big old cowboy hats on. You know, that's how their movies portray us. So, you know, if you look at how that stuff is set up, it can tell you a lot, you know, on the mentality of those people toward, you know, us. You know, and it's just, it's hard, you know, it's hard. That's why I just simplified my life. I just realized what I am, and this is just me. And, you know, and the women in my life, they know that I'm a simple person. You know, I like to fight. That's it. I just like to, you know, knock motherfuckers out. I'm not trying to be nobody else, and I'm good with that. I'm comfortable with that. So that's why I don't let anything bother me anymore, because I just realize who I am and what I am. This is what I do. This is what I like to do. And a lot of us have to just realize what we are and who we are and just be that, and make it, that'll make things a lot simpler, that'll make the system go a little bit smoother. You know, if you're nothing but a sprocket or a washer, if you're a washer, you can't act like a sprocket. You know, I just realized what it is that I do, what I'm good at, and that's all I want to do.
in that sense.
I appreciate your candor, and I do understand what you're saying, because I kind of realized that a long time ago, who I was, and you know, I didn't want to be anybody else. You know, I might have done, you know, some things that I might not have wanted to do, but I've never done anything that I've had to be ashamed of.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. But I find it kind of disheartening, because I started not this show, but the Pugilist Corner, which you're well aware of.
Yeah.
I started that show with Emmanuel Stewart, the late great Emmanuel Stewart.
Yeah.
And the reason why I started that particular program was not just because of my connection to such greatness, but because of the things that I had done in my past. And because I wanted to set a different example for those whose I felt respect that I had,
okay,
within the hood. My problem was this. When I walk through my old neighborhood, everyone knows my reputation as OG. Hey, OG, what's happening, OG? You know what I'm saying? But if I would say to one of them, hey, have you listened to my show on Thursday night? Or have you listened to one of my boxing shows? Oh, OG, you into boxing? We never knew that. We didn't know that. But they can tell you the stories of my past. And this is
right.
What, you know, I don't want you to be what I was. I want you to be what I've become.
Right.
Now, I've accepted who I am. I know who I am. But, you know, as Grandma used to say, do as I say, not as I do. Okay.
Right.
And I thought it was a kind of hypocritical argument then, but, you know, now I see what she was trying to say to me.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time putting that point over to the youth. You understand what I'm saying? Especially the youth that were in there. Now the people that have just met me within the last decade or so, they have a whole different perspective, a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
So how do you be yourself, but project that positive role model to the youth that are coming up without having to not be yourself?
Well, you know, life is pretty simple if you look at it. I mean, what, like, when you're in your days when you were getting into trouble and having fender benders with the law and stuff like that, I call those years our caterpillar years. You know, right now, you bloomed into a butterfly. Right now, I'm just now trying to bloom into a butterfly. That's life. Life is the same way. We evolve. We evolve into something that looks totally different from in which we began. So that's what's going on right now. Each year, our children, they evolve in some kind of way. So I'm just accepting the way things is right now. I look at life, and I'm learning to accept a lot of things and realize who I am, what I am, and leaving it at that. Because if you look at life, you don't see a dog trying to act like a cat. A dog's a dog. And he evolves from there. A cat is a cat. Everything on this planet is what it is, except us. We try to be something other than what we are. We're the only species on the planet that tries to be something other than what we are. Just accept what you are, accept who you are, and evolve from there. And this will be a whole lot simpler. A whole lot simpler. That's just where I'm at in my life right now. What you see is what you get, and what you're getting may get a little bit better as I age. That is it. And by the time I check up off this planet, I'll be I'll be perfection. Yeah, I caught a cold when I got back here from Vegas.
I'm kind of glad you said it because I'm going to like go way off the wagon here and talk a little bit about Vegas. Because I want to talk about discipline. And I want to talk about, another sense of awareness, the awareness of who you are and what you've gotten yourself into.
Yeah.
You practice tough love in your gym. As you told me, when they come in with two strikes. But if they show the right grit and determination, and they prove themselves, there are rewards to be had.
Yes.
Now we, most of us that are boxing fans, watched Akeem Black and his bout on Fox TV.
Right.
So, first of all, we saw, in the last outing out here in California, one of the guys kind of got a little gun shy just before the fight.
Yeah.
And this time, even though we didn't see that particular fight, when you kind of described it to me, and I'm talking about Kiwan Keyes now.
Yeah.
In his bout. He stood back to admire his work, and I think that's why he lost the fight.
He did, yeah.
Now, my question to you is, when you look at kind of the parallels between these two young gentlemen, do you think that we have a problem with the mental fortitude of what it means to be a fighter? Because being a fighter is a full-time job.
Yeah.
You can't play boxing. It's not football, not basketball, none of that. But when you go back to the generational teachings, do you think that our youth have a basic, fundamental mental weakness or a mental fear of their surrounding? In other words, why does the stage get too big when reality sets in?
Yeah, it's just like losing your virginity. You know, you think you're ready, And when the time comes, you find out that it's a little bit different than what you thought. It's a little bit more pressure than what you thought. And that's what I do. You know, physically, mentally, we are excellent warriors. I'm talking about, you know, I don't like to play the race card, but I'm talking about Africans. We just physically set up. We are physically built a certain way to do certain things a little bit faster, maybe a little bit stronger. We're set up that way. Our weakness is we have a cutoff switch where we're afraid to cross that line in our brain, and that's the line of success into success. That's where Akeem is at. Akeem has crossed that line. He crossed that line. He broke that border. He broke through that border. He's not afraid to attack, to become successful. A lot of us get right to that point and give up. We get frustrated and we give up. We don't want to cross that line. We just want to stay just above the radar. My job is to bring that fighter to that point and let that fighter know or that athlete know that it's okay to cross over. The guy that's on the other side of this line is no tougher than you. He was just strong enough to step across the line. That's it. That's what happened to Akeem. Kiwan got to that point, and he stood back and just watched his work. So I just have a little bit more work to do with him. That's all, to get him to that point. That's it. And that goes such as in life. You know, we'll get to that point to where we get ready to win something, and we will allow something to distract us. We would actually, in some cases, we will look for something to distract us. We'll look for it. And those of us that have learned to get over that edge, to get over that downfall, we're unstoppable once we get there. We're unstoppable. It's mental. Most of it is mental. And you have a lot of people out here, you know, that has mastered that. But that's one of our weaknesses. Yes, you can be so strong, but you can be the weakest all in one breath. So that's one of our downfalls, is the mental stability. But as far as everything else, we're capable of doing anything we want to do. We're capable. We are capable. A lot of things that other people have to take, supplements and things like that, we don't have to take that. We're born like that. So we're kind of a step ahead of you already. You know, your ideal body, we were born with it. We don't have to take supplements, but we have that mental issue. We're going to take the supplements anyway because we're not satisfied with the body we was born with. That's a mental issue. But once you learn how to get past that and just be who you are, don't care what ethnic group you're from, just be who you are, accept who you are. Be yourself, and you will be okay. Accept what you is and who you are. You'll be okay. Because everyone was made a little bit different for a reason. Everything is for a reason. And like I say, we're the only ones, human beings that are the only ones on the planet that tries to act other than themselves. Be yourself.
Do you think?
Hey, I tell you what. Oh yeah, perfect example. Ruiz. He was definitely himself. He was definitely himself. He went in there. He accepted that he was himself. He didn't care what people were saying about his body. He was comfortable with himself. He was sure of himself. And look what he did. Look what he did. Told Joshua up.
Hey, but like I said, I mean, you know, Cassius Clay against Sonny Liston, you know.
Right.
Cassius Clay was the B side. You know?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, you know, hey, Lamar Brewster against Klitschko.
Right.
Lamar was the B side. You know,
yeah.
So, you know, it ain't no shame. It's what you do with it.
You got to hit B before you hit A. You got to hit B before you get to A. So, you know, that's called climbing the ladder. And once you realize that, you'll be okay. Realize it. There is no shortcuts to getting to A side. No shortcuts. You have to climb the ladder. And you have to be mentally prepared to do so. You have to be mentally prepared to cross over into that zone, into that I must have this, I must succeed zone. You have to program yourself. You have to condition yourself to think positive. Surround yourself around people that thinks positive. No is not an answer. We can do anything we want to do on this planet. Anything. Anything.
How do you, you were speaking of, you know, your youth. You know, the different programs that I'm going to say that are no longer available, because, you know, we came up with things like the Police Athletic League. We came up with Golden Gloves Boxing. I mean, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their Golden Gloves. You know, I mean, little town like Youngstown, where I come from, we produce 6 world champions. You know, Harry Royal, Boom Boom Mancini. You know, I mean, I can go down the list. I mean,
yeah,
we had Golden Gloves. You know, and we, you know, when people came to the Golden Gloves, they expected a performance. I mean, that's what it was. But more than that, you had neighborhood pride. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Have we lost that not only in our communities, but in boxing also?
You know what? It's not lost, it's just suppressed. That's it. It's not lost, it's suppressed. And you know why I say it's suppressed? Because when Akeem Black fought on television, and I was just scrolling through different people's pages, you know, and a lot of them was having watch parties and stuff, and I was just listening to them and their families scream in the background when the television showed Akeem's face, when Akeem started throwing down with Joey. I could hear the children in the background screaming and hollering Akeem's name. Even though they wasn't present physically, I was able to see through social media that it was present spiritually, that we were in households. We had families crowded around a television, actually sitting down together, cheering for someone. So it's not lost. It's just suppressed. It's just being kept quiet right now. That's all. But yeah, when that made me so proud, and that's when I said, oh, hope is not gone. Hope is not lost. We still there. We just quiet with it. That's all. We there. We just quiet. You know, we just quiet. We don't want to get over cocky. We just quiet with it. But yes, a lot of people did a watch party. And then I look at the views on that fight. And the views are still going up. So that further confirms that, you know, people are paying attention. You know, that, you know, our community is watching. You know, they just watching it in private with their families. With it's close knit, that's all.
Do you think that this modern era of, you know, like you said, Facebook watch parties and streaming and the different venues, the more venues that we have now, do you think that is helping, you know, bring families together? I mean, maybe not in the traditional sense like, you know, we think of everybody, you know, sitting around the table and, you know, dad at the end of the table and, you know, with that gruff look, you know, like, you know, we been fucked up today. You know what I'm talking about.
Right.
You know, and raise your deal with it accordingly. But, you know, the thing is, I mean, do you think that sport does more to bring families in front of, you know, these modern venues than, you know, perhaps any other venue? And I'm talking about, you know, like, I would say boxing in particular, because everything else has a season. You know, you got a basketball season, you got a baseball season. Boxing season is 12 months a year. Sometimes, like you say, 24/7, you know, Daz, you know, Facebook. You can always go back and watch a fight. YouTube, you know, so if you don't watch it live, like you say, numbers are still going up.
Yeah.
But what is the effect on the family? You know, are we still in that family orientated thing, or you know, are we kind of like, you know, back let's say the first time I went to Vegas, it was an event. You know, we got the new suit, the new shoes, the hat, you know, all everything matching. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was time to show your peers, you know, like, you know, hey man, you know, like, what's up? You know, I'm gangster too. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Right.
But nowadays, you know, everybody's sitting around in jeans and, you know, T-shirts and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, what do you think? Is there a similarity or, I mean, as far as the numbers, but there definitely is a different mood, wouldn't you say?
It's still there. In my opinion, it's still there. But the how should I say this? It's still there, but the young crowd say nowadays, it's still there, but the swag is just different. That's all. It's just different. But the closeness with all the technology and stuff, the closeness is still there. It's just different. It's just different. This new generation can adapt more closely, you know, with the technologies than we actually could. And we could adapt with our technology more so better than our parents could, you know. So, you know, it went from everyone eating in the field together to everyone eating at a table together to everyone eating on in the living room watching TV together till, you know, till us dispersing throughout the house talking to each other, you know, through FaceTime on, you know, it's the same. It's just the procedures is different. That's all. That's all. Yeah, that's it. You know, my day was the Al Bundy days, you know. You know, sit on the couch and talk crap. And have your plate brought to you with the plate, with the plate stand, you know.
Of course, yeah. See, you know, I remember we couldn't eat until Grandpa got home, okay?
Right.
You know, so I mean, you know, and if he was working the afternoon shift, we were lucky. But you know, any other times, you know, if he was working the night shift, then we got the breakfast with Grandpa.
Yeah.
You know, and we had the biscuits, the grits, the eggs. The hey, man, look, I can tell you, I still remember my childhood, man. Come on, you know, but.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's you know, part of my fault because I don't have the optimism that that generation had for us. I mean, regardless, like I said, you know, I mean, you know, my grandma would have been appalled, but I mean, she still had her standards, and like I said, you know, had she still been living, I probably would have, you know, I might have been a doctor or a lawyer, who knows, you know. But it was a lack of respect for primarily my father, you know, that made me become who I became. And I'm saying that because I think it's no longer fashion, and I use that word in quotes, to follow in your father's footsteps.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I mean, most of us have fathers that had, you know, had a job, you know, like I said, I mean, you know, my father had a job in the steel mill. If I had wanted a job in the steel mill, I could have got a job in the steel mill. I had the pipeline.
Right.
Is that something that we've lost in our society in particular? I mean, we do still have the highest employment rate of any race.
That has happened, but let's go back to the caterpillar effect. You know, Dad worked at the steel mill. You know, son, he wants to do something a little bit different with that steel. You know, that's what's happening today. You know, dad worked at, like my father, he worked he was a diesel mechanic for over 30 years, you know. I wanted to do something different, you know, because by him being a diesel mechanic, that money that he made from being a diesel mechanic gave me the liberties to do other things and get other training where I was able to elevate to what we saw on television the other day. You know, a company that came from nothing is now fighting on national television in front of millions of fans. You know, this all came from a guy, you know, flipping 200-300 pound tires off of diesels, you know, and changing oil and putting starters on them big old things. I don't know what they all do, but I know he used to come home sore every day.
See?
But those, you know, and then what my mom did, you know, with when she worked at in radio and stuff like that, you know, and you know that helped my brother and I, you know, we were able to go out. That freed up a lot of hard times for us, where we were able to go out and work our craft and become who we were supposed to become in this life. And that's why he was considered a computer genius upon the time of his death. And with his programs that he wrote, they're being run right now throughout the entire corporate innovations world off a program that my brother wrote. And the same thing with me, you know. Started a company, you know, from nothing. And now it's growing into almost something. So hopefully maybe one day someone will say, hey, I think we better invest in them, because either way it comes, if we wait too long, they gonna arrive here anyway where we at. And then we won't have any options when it comes to them. It's, you know, that's what's getting ready to happen.
Well, I was just going to say, man, you know, we could probably just sit here and talk for, you know, another hour or so, but see your cough is getting a little worse, man, so I'm going to let you go. You know, and we got plenty of time. You know, I'll talk to you either next week or Tuesday about some boxing, so I'm going to let you go, man. So why don't you give us any final thoughts you got for tonight, man? And, you know, I know we have an event coming up in July. Everybody's going to be celebrating July 4th next week. Why don't you give a little heads up on what's coming up for Team Certified in July, as well as give us your final thoughts about anything that we talked about tonight or anything that you think is relevant.
Well, you know, as far as Team Certified, right now we have Fred Boyne that's going to be up to fight in Minnesota July the 13th, I believe. I don't have all the specifics right now. We're still getting the contracts and stuff drafted out and agreed upon in the weights and stuff. It will be televised. That has been agreed upon. Fox TV. And, you know, just my advice to the people, you know, just accept who you are and be yourself. That's it. This is simple. And use your eyes. You know, we were born with one mouth and two eyes, and I would imagine whoever gave us these parts wanted us to do more seeing than talking. So, and that's it. You know, peace to everybody. And this is simple.
Don't forget about them 2 years.
Huh?
Don't forget about them 2 years. You got to listen.
And listening, exactly. Yep. More seeing and listening than talking. Exactly. So I just want to say to the listeners, you know, peace. Thank you for listening. And I'll see everybody soon.
All right, my man, you take care of yourself. Get in there. You know, we hope your son is safe, man. And, you know, I'll definitely keep up with you on that. But I hope everything turns out well, man. And hey, my heart goes out, man. You know, I know what it's like as a father. You know, when you talk about, you know, a black son, that you don't know who he is. You know, so
So okay, if I hear any news, I'll text you and let you know as soon as I touch bases with him. Hopefully, it's not any bad news. But unfortunately, I'm prepared either way, because this is something that I had to, we as parents have to get ready to deal with due to the times that we're in. But I'd just like to say good night to everybody, and I'll talk to y'all later.
All right, you have a great night, man. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay.
And to those of our listeners, we have to find a way to reach our youth. We have to find a way. I know we wanted to make sure that our youth did not have to go through the same trials and tribulations that we had to. But sometimes there's such a thing as too much freedom. And it's time that we acted as parents and not as friends to our kids. Have a great night, everyone. Look forward to talking to you next week.